The sun was almost down before Morgan and Bearpaw finished scraping out a single grave big enough for all four members of the luckless ranching family, as well as their dog. There was nothing they could do about the milk cow. The two men took turns using a shovel they found in the barn. Digging in the hard ground was back-breaking work, and neither of them could do it for very long at a time. Morgan's side ached quite a bit when they were finished. If Eve had been here, she would have warned him that he was going to damage that wound and undo all the healing he'd done, he thought with a grim smile. He knew he was all right, though. He just needed some rest. He would get that rest once they were done. They wrapped each body in a blanket and carried them out one by one, placing them carefully in the grave. Then they had to cover it up again. The sun was down and night was falling when they finished that. A dwindling arc of orange and gold light remained in the western sky as Morgan tamped down the mounded dirt. They had removed their hats and shirts while they were digging. Now the breeze that sprang up felt chilly on the kid's bare, sweat-soaked torso. He drew his shirt back on and buttoned it up, then stood by the grave with his hat in his hand. Bearpaw followed suit.
Are you saying the words, kid, or am I?
You know better words than I do, Philip. You should do it.
Bearpaw nodded solemnly. He held his black hat over his heart.
The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through
the valley. Morgan closed his eyes, and as he listened to Bearpaw continue with the 23rd Psalm, he wondered what words had been said at Rebel's funeral. It didn't matter, he told himself. No words on earth held the power to bring her back, and that was all he would have wanted if he had been there.
Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Amen.
Amen.
Morgan hoped those poor people were at peace now. They didn't spend the night at the ranch. It was too ghost-haunted a place for that. Instead, they followed the creek for about half a mile and found a good place to camp. They sat by the embers of the fire.
What are we going to do when we catch up to them, kid? That's going to be tomorrow or the next day if I don't miss my guess.
We're not going to do anything. I'm going to confront them.
I don't know if you're ready for that.
You've been working with me for more than a month now. How much more do you have to teach me?
A man never stops learning. Not if he's wise.
But you know I'm fast, and I hit nearly everything I aim at.
Nearly can get you killed.
So can getting up in the morning.
I suppose you can look at it that way. What you're asking me, kid, is if you're good enough to face three hardened killers. And what I'm telling you is, I don't know. But between the two of us...
No.
Listen, kid, be reasonable. Three against two is better odds than three against one. I can hold my own in a fight.
You said yourself you're not a gunfighter. I won't have your blood on my conscience too, Philip. When I face them, it'll be alone.
Then you're a damned fool.
I've been called worse. I've called myself worse.
We'll talk about this in the morning. I'm turning in.
Fine. Things won't be any different in the morning.
As a matter of fact, though, things were different, because Morgan and Bearpaw had visitors in the morning. The sun wasn't up yet when they heard a dog barking, and then a moment later, bells ringing. Morgan rolled quickly out of his blankets and snatched up the Winchester from the ground beside him.
Take it easy. I've heard sounds like that before. Listen closer.
What is that?
Sheep. Some sheep herder is bringing his flock down to the creek to give them water before he turns them out on their graze.
The sheep came in sight a few minutes later, 50 or 60 of the woolies being herded along by an old Mexican man in a sombrero and serape, aided by a long-haired black-and-white dog that dashed back and forth with seemingly endless energy, keeping the sheep bunched up. The Mexican stopped short at the sight of Morgan, Bearpaw, and their horses. A worried look stole over his face, which was as brown and wrinkled as a walnut. Bearpaw greeted him in Spanish, though, and although Morgan wasn't fluent in the language, he was pretty sure the Paiute was telling the sheepherder not to worry, that they meant him no harm, and had simply camped here for the night.
Ask him if he's seen the men we're looking for.
For the next few minutes, Spanish flew back and forth between Bearpaw and the Mexican, the conversation going too fast for the kid to keep up with it. Then Bearpaw turned to Morgan and nodded.
He saw them yesterday, over east of here. He moves the sheep around every day, bedding them down in a different place along the creek each night so they'll have fresh grass. Sheep are hell on the grass.
What about those three bastards?
Emiliano, that's this fella here, Says they were headed down toward Gomez's place. According to him, that's a cantina in a village about 20 miles east of here. I hadn't heard of it before, but evidently it's the same sort of place as Immelman's trading post, where a man can get what he wants without too many questions being asked.
How does he know that's where they were going?
He overheard them talking about it. He savvies some English, even though he doesn't speak it very well. He was afraid when he saw them coming, so he took his dog and hid in an arroyo until they had ridden past. He was lucky. They didn't notice his sheep.
Morgan nodded as he thought about the information Emiliano had given them.
They'll probably stay for a while at Gomez's. A few hours, anyway.
They'll stay the night, more than likely.
That should give us plenty of time to get there today.
And what are you gonna do then, huh?
I don't know yet. And I know I won't ride away from there until I've dealt with them. And found out where we need to go next.
And that was the way it had played out, the kid thought now as he rode away from what had been Gomez's cantina. Bearpaw had continued to argue fervently that Morgan ought to let him come along, but in the end he had sighed and agreed to stay out of the fight.
I'm warning you, though. If you make me go back to Sawtooth and tell Eve McNally that you're dead, I'll find you in the Happy Hunting Ground one of these days and make you wish you'd listen to me.
The Happy Hunting Ground?
Ugh.
As Morgan rode back toward the spot where he had left the Paiute, he raised his right hand and looked at it. He saw it tremble, just slightly. He had felt no fear when he faced the three killers, only a cold desire to see justice done. Now, however, a little reaction was setting in. A tiny case of nerves. He would have to work on that. One of these days, he hoped, he would ask his father if he felt the same way after a gunfight. Luck had been with him today. Skill, too, of course. But no man survived such a battle without at least a smidgen of luck on his side. And there was more at stake than just survival. He really had been a damned fool, just as Bearpaw had warned him. He had come within a whisker of killing all three of his enemies without finding out where any of the other kidnappers had gone. If Julio Esquivel hadn't clung stubbornly to life for a few minutes, until Morgan realized his mistake. But despite everything, Esquivel had lived long enough to tell him that Clem Baggett and Spence Hooper had been headed for Gallup, New Mexico territory. According to the Mexican knife artist, Baggett's sister ran a whorehouse there, and the two men planned to stay with her for a while until they decided what they wanted to rob next. Bearpaw must have been watching for Morgan. The Paiute came galloping out of the little canyon where he had stayed while Morgan rode into the village. They both slowed their horses to a walk.
Kid, are you all right? I heard the shots from down there.
I'm fine. They came close. Not close enough.
They're dead?
Morgan nodded.
All three of them?
That's right. But before he died, Esquivel told me that two of the others were on their way to Gallup.
I was afraid you might forget we needed to question one of them.
When they started shooting at me, I almost did forget. Lucky for me, I didn't kill Esquivel right off.
How'd you get him to talk? I thought I was supposed to be the one in charge of torture.
I had something he wanted. Quicker death than a bullet in the gut.
Yeah, that would loosen a man's tongue, all right. You'll have to tell me all about it.
On the way to Gallup, and that is... which direction?
Bearpaw pointed south. Gallup was a rail town, and in less than 10 years of existence, it had become noted for two things. One was its high Indian population, which was no surprise because it was located in the middle of several reservations. The other was that it was rough as hell, also no surprise, because most settlements that sprang to life along the railroads were that way. The term hell on wheels had originated with the railroad towns, and Gallup certainly fit the description. It had a multitude of saloons, gambling dens, and whorehouses. One of those whorehouses was called Rosa's, and according to what Julio Esquivel had said, Rosa was Clem Baggett's sister. The first thing Morgan and Bearpaw did when they rode down out of the mountains north of the settlement was to stop a man walking along the street and ask him if he knew where the brothel was located.
Do I look like the sort of man who would know anything about a house of ill repute?
As a matter of fact, the man had been weaving slightly as he made his way down to the street, and his nose was red from drink. So yeah, the kid thought, he looked exactly like the sort of man who might know such a thing.
Sorry, mister. I didn't mean any offense. I just thought I might stand you to the price of a drink if you could help us out.
Oh, well, in that case, you go down this street a couple of blocks, and then turn right just past the railroad tracks. Rosa's will be on the left, 4 blocks down.
Morgan dug a coin out of his pocket and flipped it to the drunk.
Much obliged.
They may not let the engine in, though. It depends on what kind of mood Rosa's in.
Bearpaw, take his chances.
You like doing that, don't you?
People expect it. If you give people what they expect, then they don't get suspicious. And if a fellow thinks I don't speak much English, he's not going to be as careful about what he says around me.
That made sense, the kid thought. It had been a lucky day for him in more ways than one when Bearpaw heard that splash and came along to pull him out of the creek. Rose's was a large two-story clapboard building across the street from the railroad tracks and down a ways from the depot. A balcony ran along the front of the building so that the soiled doves who worked there could stand outside in their skimpies and wave to passengers as eastbound trains pulled in. The hope was that some of those passengers would disembark from the trains and hurry back up the street to take advantage of the local hospitality. It probably worked, at least some of the time. A corral stood next to the whorehouse. Morgan and Bearpaw led the Buckskin and the Appaloosa into it, unsaddled the horses, and placed the saddles on the corral fence along with seven or eight others. Morgan wondered which of the other horses in the corral belonged to Baggett and Hooper, if indeed any of them did. Since the two outlaws were staying a while, they might have stabled their mounts somewhere else. It didn't matter, Morgan told himself. Baggett and Hooper weren't going to have any need of horses for much longer. They went up the steps onto the porch underneath the balcony. A large black man sat in a wicker chair next to the door. He wore a derby hat and a dusty black suit over a collarless white shirt.
Afternoon to you, sir.
He looked at Bearpaw.
Looking for some fine ladies, are you?
That's right.
You can go right on in, and welcome. The engine's gotta stay out here, though.
But he's my friend.
Don't matter. Miss Rosa says no engines today. And what Miss Rosa says goes.
No worry about Bearpaw, friend Morgan. Bearpaw, sit on step, wait for friend.
No, you can't sit there either. Mosey on down to the train station, why don't you? There'll be a westbound in soon. You can probably cage some money for firewater.
Bearpaw, do like Doc Man say.
He turned away, and one eye opened and closed quickly in a wink that Morgan could see, even though the bouncer couldn't. The Paiute shuffled off down the street while Morgan stepped inside the whorehouse. As a younger man, well before his marriage to Rebel, he had been inside a few such establishments in Boston, but those had been high-class enterprises, nothing like this shabby, squalid brothel. The rug on the floor in the parlor was threadbare, and some of the overstuffed furniture around the room was losing its stuffing. The same was true of most of the women waiting in the parlor for customers. They were getting on in years, blousy in soiled shifts, and more than one smile was missing some teeth as they grinned at Morgan in what was supposed to be an enticing manner. He didn't feel the least bit tempted. He couldn't imagine any circumstances in which he would. Maybe if he hadn't actually seen a woman for 15 or 20 years. One of the whores caught his eye, though. She was younger than the others, around 20 years old, and even though her skin lacked any reddish hue, her raven hair and high cheekbones testified to at least some Indian blood in her. She was even slightly pretty in a coarse way. A woman in a crimson gown with graying blonde hair piled high on her head came into the parlor through another door. She had a cup of coffee in one hand, and Morgan guessed she had been out in the kitchen heating up the brew. She stopped short at the sight of Morgan.
Howdy, mister. I didn't know anybody had come in.
He's a pretty one, ain't he, Rosa?
The madam moved toward Morgan.
You looking for some female companionship, cowboy?
Morgan hesitated. He was going to have to spend some time here, more than likely, until he got a line on Baggett and Hooper. He wasn't sure how to go about this, but he knew that he couldn't stay if he didn't act like he wanted to partake of the dubious pleasures offered by the house.
That one.
Morgan pointed to the youngest whore, the one with Indian blood.
Good choice. Tasman, take our guest upstairs and show him a fine old time.
The young woman stood up from the divan, sidled over to Morgan, and took hold of his right arm with both of her hands, pressing herself against him so that he felt the warm mound of her breast prodding his side.
You come with me, mister. I promise you won't ever be sorry that you picked me.
Morgan felt a surge of panic inside him. He didn't want this woman. He didn't want any woman, except the one he could no longer have. At that moment, the door from the parlor to the kitchen opened again, and a man came into the room. Morgan glanced at him, saw a middle-aged hombre with a battered Stetson shoved back on his head and a close-cropped salt-and-pepper beard.
Hey, Rosa, how about fronting me some more money? There's a poker game down at the saloon tonight, and I reckon I can clean up in it.
The young whore started tugging Morgan toward the stairs. Rosa turned to the man who had just come into the room.
Damn it, Clem, I've told you not to bother me while I'm working.
Clem Baggett. The name rang in Morgan's mind. This was one of the men he and Bearpaw had come here looking for. Morgan turned his head to look closer at the man and recognized him from that awful night in Black Rock Canyon, even though he had only seen Baggett for a moment by the glaring light of those torches alongside the trail. Morgan wasn't the only one who recognized somebody, though. Even though Morgan looked quite a bit different now, Baggett's eyes bulged out in shock.
Son of a bitch! You're that bastard from Carson City!
Then Clem reached for the Colt on his hip. Morgan pushed Tasman away, right into Rosa. The two women collided and fell to the floor. Morgan lunged out of the way just before Baggett's gun blasted. Morgan felt the hot wind rip of its passage. His Colt had flickered into his hand. Baggett pitched to the floor, dropping his gun as he did so. Morgan had time to hope that Baggett wasn't fatally wounded, since he didn't know yet where Hooper was, and then the front door crashed open and the huge black bouncer came into the room.
Get him, Hyde! He killed Clem!
Then the bouncer called Hyde was on him, reaching for him with long tree trunk-like arms. Morgan could have shot the man, but as far as he could tell, Hyde was unarmed. Morgan tried to twist away, knowing that if those arms ever trapped him in their circle, he would be in for some rib crushing. He managed to avoid the bear hug, but Hyde grabbed the back of his shirt and threw him at the wall. Morgan's right shoulder slammed into it. His arm went numb, the gun slipped from his fingers and fell to the floor. He had been hoping to wallop Hyde over the head a few times with the Colt and maybe slow him down that way. Now he was unarmed, and definitely out of his class as far as weight, reach, and rough-and-tumble ability were concerned. As Hyde charged him again, he dropped into a crouch and threw himself at the big man's knees. Morgan hit Hyde low, and the bouncer fell, but he landed on top of Morgan, who was pinned to the floor by Hyde's weight. Hyde got one hand on Morgan's throat and closed it, cutting off his air. Morgan's vision started to blur as he tried to gasp, but he could still see Hyde looming above him, raising a giant fist and getting ready to bring it down like a sledgehammer into the middle of Morgan's face. Suddenly, Hyde's eyes rolled up in his head until only the whites showed. Then he pitched forward, senselessly. He was still on top of Morgan, though, so all the kid could do was stare over Hyde's shoulder at Bearpaw, who stood there with the sharps clutched in his hands. Morgan figured it was the butt of the rifle he had heard connecting solidly with the back of Hyde's skull.
Get him off me!
Bearpaw looked like he wanted to laugh, but he kept a straight face as he bent down and grasped the collar of Hyde's coat.
You'll have to help me. Not sure I can budge this big fella myself.
Morgan got his hands against Hyde's shoulders and shoved while Bearpaw heaved. After a moment, they were able to roll the big man off Morgan.
Check on Baggett.
Morgan sat up.
I had to shoot him.
Bearpaw turned toward Baggett. Bearpaw took a sudden step back.
I'm shot.
Morgan surged to his feet and saw Rosa swinging an over and under derringer toward him.
You son of a bitch! You killed my brother!
Morgan swatted the little pistol aside. That emptied it, but he closed his hand over it and twisted it out of Rosa's fingers anyway.
No!
So she couldn't reload and try again to shoot him. He was worried about Bearpaw, so he gave the madam a shove that sent her stumbling backward to sit down hard on her ample rump. Morgan swung around and saw that Bearpaw had sunk onto the arm of a ratty divan. The whores had all scurried away and vanished except for Tasmin, who stood huddled in fear against one of the walls. Bearpaw slipped a hand inside his shirt, pulled it out, and looked at the crimson stains on his fingertips.
Yeah, I'm shot all right.
Then he toppled over backward onto the divan. Suddenly a slug whipped past Morgan. He looked up and saw a man standing at the top of the stairs, smoke curling from the barrel of the gun in his fist. Morgan recognized this man from Black Rock Canyon too, and knew he had to be Spence Hooper. Morgan launched himself into a dive toward the Colt he had dropped. He was able to snatch up the gun in mid-roll. He came to a stop at the bottom of the stairs and fired up at Hooper. Hooper listed sideways as blood and bone exploded from his left kneecap. He pitched forward and tumbled down the stairs, coming to a stop just a few steps up from Morgan. The kid scrambled to his feet. Hooper had dropped his gun, and Morgan didn't see any other weapons. He turned so that he could cover Hooper while checking on Rosa, Tasman, and Hyde.
Oh, God, no.
Rosa had crawled over to her brother and now lay half on top of him, sobbing. Baggett hadn't moved since he went down, so Morgan thought there was a good chance he really was dead. Tasman still stood against the wall, watching wide-eyed. Bearpaw rolled onto his side and started trying to struggle to his feet.
I'm all right.
Morgan hurried over to help him.
Bullet just nicked me. Keep an eye on the other one.
Morgan ignored what Bearpaw said, got an arm around the Paiute, and helped him stand up. Morgan looked at Tasman.
How quick will the law get here?
What?
The law, the local sheriff, police, whatever they have here. How long?
I don't know. They leave this end of town alone, mostly. But with that many shots, they'll have to come see what it's about. 5 or 10 minutes, maybe?
Morgan hoped that would be long enough.
Hooper's still alive. We need to question him.
Help me over there, then stand back and keep an eye out for trouble.
The two men went to the foot of the stairs. Bearpaw reached down, rested a hand on the outlaw's thigh just above the shattered knee, and pushed hard.
That was just to get your attention. Where are the others?
What others?
The other men who rode with you when you kidnapped Conrad Browning's wife.
I don't know what you're talking about. I never kidnapped no woman.
Bearpaw pushed on Hooper's leg again.
I don't know where they all went. But Radigan and that breed, White Rock, were gonna do some prospecting in Colorado. Radigan said he knew a place up in the Sangre de Cristos where he thought there might be some gold. I think it was called Blue Creek or something like that. Oh, God, don't do that again, Redskin. I can't stand it.
What about the others?
I don't know. I swear. Vernon used to talk about some place down on the border, but I don't know any more than that. And nobody else told me anything about where they were going when we split up. You gotta get me to a Sawbones. I'm hurt bad.
You're sure you don't know where we can find any of the others?
No, I swear that's all I know.
Then you don't have to worry about a Sawbones.
His arm and shoulder moved. Morgan saw Hooper give a little jerk. The man's eyes widened. Morgan looked down in time to see Bearpaw let go of a knife with a staghorn handle that protruded from Hooper's chest. Hooper opened his mouth, but no more words came out before his head fell back on the steps. He kept staring as the life faded from his eyes.
Help me up. We better get out of here.
It was too late for that. Three men crowded into the room, each of them carrying a shotgun. Morgan started to lift his gun, then stopped as he spotted the badges the men wore pinned to their coats.
Arrest them, Marshal! String them up! They murdered my brother!
The lawmen leveled their greeners at Morgan and Bearpaw.
Shuck your irons, boys! We got some sorting out to do here.
An hour later, Bearpaw and Kid Morgan were sitting in an iron cot in a cell of the Gallup City Jail.
I hope that telegram you sent does some good, kid. Otherwise, things don't look too promising for us. Therefore, never send to ask for whom the bell tolls, John Donne said. It tolls for thee.
And just what does that mean?
It means that if you hear them hammering together a gallows, it's probably going to be for us.
It had taken a lot of talking to convince Marshal Davis to let him send a telegram to Claudius Turnbuckle in San Francisco. The message had been a short one. Still alive. Stop. Need legal help. Gallup NMT. Stop. Conrad. Rosa had insisted, tearfully and at the top of her lungs, that Morgan and Bearpaw had burst into the whorehouse and started shooting for no reason. They had gunned down her brother, and then they had shot Spence Hooper and caused him to fall on his own knife. That was the only explanation that made any sense to the marshal, since the knife in Hooper's chest belonged to him. Even Rosa admitted that. She had been too busy grieving over her brother, who was indeed dead, shot cleanly through the heart, to realize that that version of events didn't make complete sense. Hooper wouldn't have lived long enough for Bearpaw to question him if that had been the case. But they already had one murder charge hanging over their heads, Morgan thought, so why complicate matters even more?
You didn't have to kill him. I would have done it once we found out everything we could from him.
You mean you would have shot him in cold blood?
That's the way I killed Hank Winchell.
There was nothing cold-blooded about that night. You'd just seen your wife murdered. You were in a state of shock. Pulling the trigger on a man weeks later is different.
I shot Julio.
You put him out of his misery. He would have died anyway from that bullet in his guts, and he would have suffered a lot more. You were merciful to him, kid. That wasn't murder. Me? I've already got plenty of bad things on my conscience. Taking care of one outlaw who needed killing won't cause me to lose any sleep.
Morgan didn't say anything. Despite the hatred and the need for vengeance that had consumed him since leaving Carson City, he was coming to realize that there was a difference between killing a man in a fair fight and snuffing out the life of someone who couldn't fight back.
How's your shoulder?
Hurts like the devil, but I'll live. That little pop gun of Rose's didn't have much punch. A bullet wasn't more than a couple inches under the skin.
A doctor had come to the jail after Morgan and Bearpaw were locked up and tended to the Paiute's wound, which was messy but not life-threatening. A bulky bandage showed now as a lump under Bearpaw's shirt.
Kid, I'm sorry things got out of hand. I never figured on Baggett recognizing you like that.
Neither did I. I guess he's got a good eye for faces, because I've changed a lot since that night. We just didn't have any luck.
A man's always got luck. It's just that sometimes it's good, and sometimes it's bad. Mostly it's some of both. We're still alive, aren't we?
For now.
Morgan had visions of a trial, and a judge passing sentence, and a long walk up 13 steps to the gallows. The door into the cell block opened, and Marshall Davis came in with another man, a tall, imposing, white-haired gent in an expensive suit and Stetson.
There they are, Colonel.
Thank you, Marshal.
Morgan had heard voices like that before, and they were nearly always in courtrooms. He got to his feet and went over to grasp the iron bars in the door as Marshal Davis went back into the jail office and the stranger came over to the cell.
Did Turnbuckle send you?
Colonel Theodore Binswanger at your service, sir. My old friend from law school, the esteemed Claudius Turnbuckle, did indeed communicate urgently with me this afternoon via the telegraphic wires. He asked that I render any possible aid to you, and I suppose by extension to your ruddy companion there. It's quite fortunate for you that Claudius is acquainted with someone who practices law here. Marshal Davis tells me that the charge will be quite serious when you're arraigned. Murder.
It wasn't murder. Baggett fired first and so did Hooper. It was self-defense in both cases.
The story told by the proprietress of the establishment varies considerably from the version that Mr. Morgan, is it?
That's right.
Morgan didn't know how much Turnbuckle might have told Colonel Binswanger in his telegram, so for now he was going to keep his connection with Conrad Browning to himself.
Oh, by the way, Claudius sent a private wire for you as well.
He held out a folded, sealed paper.
I've honored the sanctity of your communication.
Obliged.
Morgan took the telegram and tore it open to read the words printed on it. What in the blazes? Stop. Thought you were dead. Stop. Will try to locate Frank and tell him. Stop. Trust Binswanger. Stop. Full of hot air, but honest. Stop. Morgan folded the message and slipped it into the pocket of his black shirt. He was glad he had finally gotten in touch with Turnbuckle. At least he had started the process of letting his father know that he was still alive. It had taken a lot longer than Morgan had intended.
Bearpaw and I just stopped at the whorehouse for, well, you know.
I am aware of the establishment's unsavory reputation, naturally, though I have no, personal knowledge of what goes on there.
Bearpaw was outside, and I was just standing there in the parlor when that first fella came in, yelled something about Carson City, and started blazing away at me. All I can figure is that he thought I was somebody else. Somebody he had a grudge against.
Have you ever been to Carson City?
Yeah, but I never saw that hombre before. He didn't have any reason to throw down on me.
What happened then?
Morgan told the rest of the story just the way it had happened, leaving out only the part about Bearpaw questioning Spence Hooper and then putting Hooper's own knife in the outlaw's chest. Binswanger nodded.
That does indeed sound like classic clear-cut cases of self-defense. Unfortunately, it's your word against that of this Rosa. And I'm relatively certain that the, ladies in her employ will corroborate her testimony. However, I happen to know that there's a move afoot among the city fathers to clean up some of the more unsavory sections of town. I have a feeling that if there was even one witness to support your claims, the judge could be persuaded to drop the charges against you before the case proceeds any further. On the condition, of course, that the two of you depart from our fair city post-haste.
We'd be glad to, if the marshal would just let us out.
I'll see what I can find in the way of a witness. But to be honest with you, sir, I don't hold out much hope of success.
Binswanger left the jail, and Morgan sat on the cot next to Bearpaw again. He picked up his hat, which was lying on the cot next to him, and looked at it idly.
Well, damn.
What is it?
Morgan held up the hat and poked his finger through a hole in the crown.
There's a matching one on the other side. My hat fell off and the bullet must have hit the hat while it was lying on the floor.
Pure luck once again. Good luck in this case.
How can you say that? I've got a hole in my hat.
Better than a hole in your head.
Yeah, you're right about that.
They watched the light fade in the cell's single barred window. It faced west, so they could see a slice of sky as it turned orange and crimson from the setting sun. Some of those brilliant hues still remained in the sky when Colonel Binswanger appeared again, bustling into the cell block when the marshal unlocked the door.
Judge Applewhite has dismissed the charges.
Davis unlocked the cell door and swung it open.
We weren't even arraigned yet.
You were arraigned in absentia, and then the charges were dismissed. Simple, really. Informal, but effective. The only caveat, as I said, is that the two of you are now expected to depart as soon as possible. You are henceforth persona non grata in Gallup.
He means, light a shuck out of here.
Morgan retrieved his Stetson from the cot.
We intend to. Just as soon as I buy a new hat.
Well, make it quick. Rose is going to pitch a fit when she hears about this. And she's got some influential friends in this town. Men who use the back door when they visit her place, if you know what I mean.
Morgan did. He wasn't surprised to hear that some of Gallup's leading citizens were also secret patrons of the whorehouse. He and Bearpaw followed Binswanger out of the cell block, with the marshal bringing up the rear. Binswanger led them through the jail office. They stepped out onto the porch, and Morgan was surprised to see the young whore Tasman standing there, wearing a simple brown dress.
You? You're the one who told the law what really happened?
That's right. I couldn't let you and your friend be railroaded for something you didn't do.
She stood there while Binswanger shook hands with Morgan and nodded civilly to Bearpaw.
I'll bid you gentlemen farewell. Claudius instructed me to submit the bill for my services to Turnbuckle and Stafford, and he would see to taking care of it.
Thanks. You were a big help, Colonel.
I didn't do all that much.
He gestured toward Tasman.
It was mostly this young lady here.
He tipped his hat to her and then walked away.
You know, you're not going to be able to work for Rosa anymore after this. I don't know how we can thank you for what you've done.
I do. I heard what that bastard Hooper told you.
From the tone in her voice, Morgan could guess that she'd probably had a few unpleasant experiences with Hooper while he and Baggett were staying at Rose's.
You're going to Colorado to look for those two men he was talking about, aren't you?
Morgan glanced at Bearpaw, who inclined his head as if to say that it was pretty obvious they were, but he was leaving the decision of what to tell Tasman to Morgan.
That's right. Reckon we are.
Then if you want to pay me back for helping you, take me with you.
Morgan and Bearpaw both stared at the young soiled dove.
Take you with us? We can't do that.
Well, I can't stay here in Gallup. Do you think Rose is going to let me get away with helping you? At the very least, she'll have Hyde beat me. She might even order him to kill me. No, I've got to get out of town, and since I got in trouble helping the two of you...
She has a good point, kid.
Morgan struggled with the decision facing him. When he rode away from Carson City, he'd had in mind tracking down the kidnappers on his own so that no one else would be endangered. Then he had wound up traveling with Bearpaw. That had worked out all right so far, other than the fact that the Paiute had been wounded. Now this young woman, little more than a girl, actually, was asking to join them on their journey as well. Tasman seemed somehow different now that she was out of the whorehouse. She had scrubbed the paint off her face and was dressed more modestly, of course. Morgan supposed that most men didn't go to a place like Rose's for the conversation. His thoughts were straying. And Tasman still stood there on the jail porch, waiting for an answer. Morgan considered what she had done for him and Bearpaw. He didn't see how he could deny her request. All she wanted was a chance to be safe from Rose's revenge.
All right, you can come with us, for now. But if we find a good place for you to stay, that's it. You'll need a horse, too.
I have one. How do you think I got here to Gallup?
I don't have any idea. And don't take that as a request to tell me your life story.
Morgan knew he was being a little rude, but he didn't like being forced into things.
We'll be leaving in about 10 minutes. Can you be ready to ride?
I can. I don't have much in the way of belongings, and I brought it all with me when I slipped out of Rose's and went to look for Colonel Binswanger. My bag is down at the livery stable with my horse.
All right. We'll meet you there in 10 minutes.
Thank you. You won't be sorry, Mr. Morgan.
She had said something similar when she was about to take him upstairs in the whorehouse, but it sounded entirely different now. Tasman hurried off, while Morgan and Bearpaw angled across the street toward a general store so that Morgan could buy a new hat. He still had quite a bit of the money he had brought with him from Carson City. As plentiful as game was, they hadn't had to spend much on supplies. The store didn't have a black hat like the one Morgan had been wearing. He settled on a brown one instead, with a lighter brown band. The crown was slightly higher than his old hat, but still flat.
Looks good on you. Why don't you get that buckskin jacket there to go with it?
Morgan frowned as he looked at the jacket Bearpaw indicated. It was the sort that pulled over the head, with a neck opening that laced up with a rawhide thong. Fringe decorated the shoulders and arms of the garment.
Sort of gaudy, isn't it? This weather's too hot for a jacket.
Sure, it's hot now, but it won't be long before the northers start blowing down through these parts. You can be sweating at noon and shivering by the time the sun goes down. Besides, that rawhide fringe comes in mighty handy for mending saddles or harnesses.
Morgan thought it over for a moment, then shrugged and nodded.
All right, you've talked me into it. I don't reckon it would hurt to be prepared for cooler weather.
He paid the storekeeper for the purchases, then walked out wearing the brown hat, with the buckskin jacket thrown over his left arm. He still thought it was a little gaudy, but he had to admit it was the sort of thing a notorious gunfighter might wear, at least in dime novel illustrations. And since Morgan had been basing a lot of his new personality on these very dime novels, he supposed he ought to dress the part. Give people what they expected to see, Bearpaw had said. Morgan was willing to do just that. Their horses were still in the corral next to Rose's. Morgan kept a wary eye on the place as they retrieved the buckskin and the Appaloosa in case Rosa spotted them and sent Hyde after them. The door was closed, and the shades were pulled on the windows, though. It looked like the house was closed down, maybe because Rosa was mourning her brother. Tasman was waiting in front of the livery stable when they walked up, leading their horses. She had changed into a man's work shirt with the sleeves rolled up a couple of turns on her forearms, as well as a pair of denim trousers. Morgan glanced at her saddle.
You're going to ride astride?
I reckon you already know that I'm not exactly a lady. I never cared for a side saddle.
That's fine with me.
A faint smile touched his lips as he recalled all the times he had seen Rebel riding that way. She didn't have any use for a side saddle either. The three of them mounted up. Tasman had a canvas bag tied to her saddle horn. She reached inside it and brought out an old hat with a floppy brim. She jammed it down on her head and heeled her horse into motion. Morgan and Bearpaw exchanged quick grins as they let her take the lead. Once they reached the edge of town, Morgan looked over to Tasman.
Where exactly are we going?
Colorado, right? Somewhere in the Sangre de Cristos?
You know how to get there?
Tasman looked back at the two men.
Well, no. I just wanted to get out of Gallup as quickly as I could. You know how to get there?
Just a general idea. I reckon Bearpaw does, though.
Heap right. No way to the mountains.
You've forgotten that I heard you talking back at Rose's place. Don't try to pull that on me.
Sorry. You get in the habit of doing something and it's hard to stop.
Not me. I just as soon break all of my habits. And the sooner the better.
Bearpaw was right about the weather. As they traveled eastward across the rugged New Mexico landscape, the first couple of days remained warm, even hot. But then on the third morning, a strong wind started blowing out of the north. It carried more than a hint of a chill in it. They all dismounted to get ready to break camp.
I told you, tonight it'll be cold enough to make your breath fog.
Morgan wondered what that would mean for the sleeping arrangements. The first two nights, there had been a minimum of awkwardness because Tasman took her bedroll and carried it a good distance away from the men before she spread it out. Tonight, she would probably want to be closer to the fire. By noon, he had taken the buckskin jacket out of his saddlebags and slipped it on to help shield him from the chilly wind. Tasman wore a flannel coat, and Bearpaw had a small buffalo robe draped around his shoulders. The sky was clear, but the Paiute frowned as he squinted up at it.
Snow in less than a week.
How can you tell?
My people live in harmony with nature. We know these things.
One of my grandfathers was a Hopi medicine man. He always said things like that.
And he was right, wasn't he?
Usually.
That night, the air was frigid. As Morgan expected, Tasman spread her blankets near the fire. He made sure there was a little distance between them when he laid out his own bedroll. When his eyes snapped open sometime later, the wind had died down. Unsure what had woken him, he gazed up into a crystal clear sky in which the stars seemed like they were about to tumble down around him. Then something moved against his back. His muscles tensed.
It's just me.
Tasman snuggled closer to him.
I got cold, so I moved my blankets over next to yours. All right?
Fine. We want you to freeze. Go back to sleep.
She didn't, though, and neither did he.
Kid?
What?
The other day at Rose's place, when you picked me to take upstairs, you didn't really want to go up there with me, did you? You were just looking for Baggett and Hooper, right?
That's right.
And you don't want me now either, do you?
Morgan hesitated, not because he was unsure of the answer, but rather because he didn't want to hurt her feelings.
It's not that I don't want you, Tasman. I don't want any woman right now. I have other things I have to deal with first before I can even think about anything like that.
You have so much sadness in you, kid. I'm sorry for whatever caused it. If there's anything I can do to help?
Just stay out of the way if there's trouble.
Fine. I won't be a bother.
Then she turned over and pressed her back against his, rather than spooning with him. That was probably better, he thought. Craggy peaks, lushly timbered valleys, arid wastelands, all passed underneath their horses' hooves as they continued eastward, angling somewhat to the north toward Colorado as they did so. The cold weather passed by, the wind turned out of the south again, and the temperatures warmed. This was a volatile time of year, though, Bearpaw pointed out. There might be another blue norther at any time, and he hadn't backed off on his prediction of snow. They avoided large towns, traveling north of Albuquerque and south of Taos and Santa Fe, then turned in a more northerly direction to follow the mountains. The Sangre de Cristos were in the northeastern corner of the territory, running north and south from New Mexico into southern Colorado. Raton Pass was on the border between the two. Bearpaw explained all this to Morgan and Tasman, and since he seemed to know where he was going, they were content to let him take the lead.
Is there anywhere west of the Mississippi you haven't been?
Sure there is, but I can't think of any place right now.
How did you wind up in Sawtooth?
Everybody's got to be somewhere. I'd lived a pretty eventful life, and Sawtooth seemed like a nice quiet place to settle down and live out the rest of my years in peace. It was, too, until Kid Morgan showed up.
Tasman looked over at Morgan.
I know you're supposed to be a famous gunfighter, but I don't think I'd ever heard of you.
You just don't travel in the right circles. The kid's famous, all right.
She looked like she wasn't sure whether she believed him or not. Morgan didn't say anything. He still felt a little uncomfortable about the whole business of pretending to be somebody else, somebody who didn't really exist. Although Kid Morgan was becoming more and more real with every gunfight, he realized. The view from the top of the pass was one of the most spectacular they had seen so far, with majestic mountains rising on either side of them, and behind them, plains stretching away for scores of miles to the south and east. Up ahead, in Colorado, the mountains continued, although they were higher and more rugged to the west, falling off into rolling hills to the east. The climb to the pass was steep, so Bearpaw reined in to rest his mount when they reached the top, and the kid and Tasman followed suit. They swung down from their saddles and stood there for long minutes, looking out over the impressive landscape.
This is a lot prettier than the Pueblo where I grew up.
You said you're Hopi?
Only a fourth. My other grandparents were white. Missionaries, in fact, who came out here from the east to save the heathen savages. They must not have done a very good job of it, considering the way I turned out.
Well, I'm not sure I'd go that far.
You don't know just how heathen I am.
She gave a defiant toss of her head.
And you never will, Mr. Morgan. All that is behind me now.
That was fine with him, he thought. Bearpaw's attention was focused on their back trail, and when Tasman went off into the brush to take care of some personal business, he motioned Morgan over to him.
I think somebody's following us, kid.
Morgan's eyes narrowed as he scanned the landscape below the pass. He didn't see anything moving except a couple of hawks soaring on the wind currents, but he trusted Bearpaw.
How many?
Three, I think. They're a long way back, and I can't even see them right now. But I've caught several glimpses of them today. I'm pretty sure they're back there.
How do you know they're actually following us?
I don't, of course. They could be pilgrims who just happen to be going the same direction we are. A lot of people use this pass. But I slowed down and they slowed down. I pushed a little harder and they pushed a little harder.
Instinctively, Morgan's hand dropped to the butt of his gun.
Who'd have a reason to follow us?
That madam back in Gallup could have hired some gun wolves to come after us and settle the score for her brother.
Morgan nodded. That was a possibility, all right. But it didn't seem likely to him.
We'll keep our eyes open. If they're following us, when do you think they'll make their move?
No telling. They're close enough, they can catch up tonight if they want to.
Tasman was coming back. Morgan glanced at her.
I wish we'd found a place to leave her.
I'm not sure she would have stayed. That girl's got ideas in her head about you, whether she'll admit it or not, and whether you like it or not.
That was one of the last things Morgan wanted to hear, but he was afraid Bearpaw might be right.
If there's trouble, I'm counting on you to keep her safe.
What are you going to be doing?
Killing whoever's given us that trouble.
That's a storm coming. Remember that snow I told you about?
Bearpaw nodded toward the distant clouds.
It's up there. We'll need to find a good place to camp, or we can get out of the weather.
Maybe we should make for the nearest town.
Bearpaw squinted at the sky.
That'd be Trinidad. But I'm not sure we've got the time to make it that far before nightfall. We'll give it a try.
The horses were tired after a long day on the trail, though, so Morgan and his friends could only push them so hard. The dark blue line on the horizon seemed to rush southward toward them, and it wasn't long before it turned into looming bluish-gray clouds. The wind picked up, and the chill was back.
You see a good place to camp, we'll go ahead and stop.
The Paiute nodded. It was hard to tell, because his face was usually impassive anyway, but Morgan thought he looked more concerned than usual. Between the weather and those three riders following them, this might turn out to be a long, dangerous night. A short time later, Bearpaw pointed to a ridge to the left of the trail.
I think we'd better go over there and see if we can find some place to hunker down. A nice overhang would give us a place to get out of the weather.
Lead the way. We'll be right behind you.
It took about a half an hour for them to locate a suitable place. A granite bluff jutted into the air and sloped inward to a cave-like area at its base. It would provide shelter from the north wind and block at least some of the snow, if Bearpaw was right about that being on the way as well. Morgan and Bearpaw tended to the horses while Tasman gathered wood and built a fire. Ever since they had left Gallup, she had been good about helping out around camp and had done her share of the work without any complaints. She soon had a nice little fire blazing away merrily, the smoke rising to spread out against the overhanging rock and then disperse. By now, the sky was completely overcast. Dark gray clouds scudded swiftly overhead. The temperature dropped steadily. Morgan and Bearpaw hunkered next to the fire.
Looks like you were right, Philip.
I just hope we're not in for a full-fledged blizzard. We may be stuck here for several days if the snow gets too deep.
Do you expect that to happen?
Not really. It's too early in the season for that. But when you're talking about the weather, kid, you can't really take anything for granted. It does what it wants to do. And there's not a blessed thing we humans can do about it except try to adapt.
They had some dried venison plus the makings for biscuits. Bearpaw prepared supper, and the three of them sat by the fire and ate the meager meal. While they were eating, Morgan saw snowflakes begin to fall, whipped along by the wind.
There's your snow. I guess you knew what you were talking about after all.
I told you. Never argue with a redskin about the weather.
The light had begun to fade. Morgan went to the front of the cave-like area underneath the overhanging bluff and looked out across the hills he could see from there. He was especially watchful for any signs of motion, but didn't see any. Maybe the riders who had been behind them earlier had sought shelter from the storm, too. If they had any sense, that's what they would have done, whether they were following Morgan and his companions or not. Morgan turned and went back to the fire. Behind him, the snowfall grew thicker. If the circumstances had been different, they would have put out the fire so that anyone tracking them wouldn't be able to see it. As it was, though, without the fire, it would get mighty cold before morning. They would let it burn down to embers, but wouldn't extinguish it completely. During the time they had been traveling together, Morgan had gotten a little more comfortable having Tasman around. She didn't make any pretense of separating her bedroll from his anymore. She was huddled against him for warmth as the flames died down. During a brief, private conversation earlier in the evening, Morgan and Bearpaw had agreed to take turns standing watch tonight, just in case anything happened. Bearpaw took the first turn. Morgan dozed off, feeling a little chill seeping into his bones from the rocky ground, despite the blankets underneath him. Outside their little sanctuary, the snow blew almost horizontal to the ground.
Wake up, kid.
Huh?
The voice penetrated Morgan's sleep-fogged brain. It took a second before he realized that it didn't belong to Bearpaw, nor was it Tasman's voice. Morgan lunged up from his blankets and reached for the gun on his hip. Something crashed into his face and sent him sprawling onto his back before he could grab the Colt. A second later, there was another jarring impact, this time on his left side. Somebody was kicking him, he realized. The faint glow from the embers, reflected back from the overhanging bluff, showed him a dark shape looming above him. He rolled away as the man tried to kick him again. That took him past the Winchester he had placed beside his blankets when he turned in. He snatched up the rifle and started swinging the barrel around to bear on his attacker.
Hold it, kid, or I'll blow the horse brains out.
Morgan froze, and not from the frigid chill in the air. Somebody snapped a match into life, and its harsh glare revealed a shocking scene. Bearpaw lay huddled near the horses while the man with the match stood over him, holding a gun on him. Another man had jerked Tasman to her feet and had an arm looped around her throat while his other hand pressed the barrel of a revolver to her head. The third man, the one who had been trying to stomp the kid to death, was Hyde, the giant black bouncer from Rose's place in Gallup. He pushed some fresh wood into the fire, and after a moment it caught and grew brighter. Hyde wasn't the only one of the trio Morgan recognized. The other two hombres had been members of the gang that had kidnapped Rebel. He hadn't seen them since that night in Black Rock Canyon, but their images were still fresh in his mind, preserved perfectly by the hatred he felt.
Now put the rifle down, kid. I ain't gonna tell you again.
Morgan grimaced and tossed the Winchester aside.
Reach over with your left hand and take the Colt out.
Once he's unarmed, I'm gonna bust him into little pieces.
Not until we have a talk with him. And do what I told you, kid. Shut that iron.
Carefully, Morgan reached over with his left hand and slipped the Colt out of its holster. He wondered for a second just how good a shot he was with that hand. Not good enough, he decided. He bent over and placed the revolver on the ground next to the Winchester.
Now back away from them.
Morgan did so reluctantly. Tasman was watching him with a fearful expression on her face. He knew from some of the things she had said during the trip that she was terrified of Hyde. Rosa had run the house with an iron fist, and Hyde was her enforcer. The beatings he doled out on Rose's command had seriously injured some of the soiled doves.
I guess Rosa sent you after us to settle the score for her brother.
We got scores of our own to settle. Clem Baggett and Spence Hooper were friends of ours. We came to see him and found out they'd been shot dead by some fancy gunslinger. Clem's sister was glad to send this big darky with us to help track you down.
Even after splitting up, most of the gang seemed to have converged on Gallup, Morgan thought. He supposed that wasn't so surprising. Baggett's sister ran a whorehouse after all. These hard cases probably had thought that they could lie low there as well as anywhere else.
What's your game, mister? Why'd you come gunning for Clem and Spence?
We weren't gunning for them. I explained it all back in Gallup. I just stopped off at Rose's for a little slap and tickle. And that fella Baggett came into the parlor and started shooting at me.
Well, Clem was a pretty level-headed sort. He wouldn't have blazed away like that and put his sister in danger without a good reason. He recognized you.
He mistook me for somebody else, if anything. I never saw him before.
The man pressed the gun barrel against Tasman's head.
I don't believe you.
It's the truth.
Morgan looked desperately for some way to turn the tables on these men, but so far he hadn't found any. The other man, the one guarding Bearpaw, frowned as he stared at Morgan.
Abel, there's something familiar about this hombre. I swear I've seen him before.
Abel. That had to be Abel Dean. Morgan plucked the name out of his memory. Dean squinted at him.
Yeah, Jim, I think maybe you're right. He looks familiar to us. And Clem recognized him. Who the hell can he be?
All I know is he's Kid Morgan, and I'm gonna kill him.
Jim Fowler, that was the other man's name Morgan recalled, took a step forward.
Maybe I'm going loco, but I swear this fella looks like the one from Carson City. The one whose wife we took out to that canyon.
Son of a bitch, it is him!
He jerked the gun away from Tasman's head.
Kill him!
Before either of the kidnappers could fire, Bearpaw suddenly lunged hard against Fowler's legs. Fowler stumbled to the side as he pulled the trigger. At the same time, Tasman turned her head and sank her teeth into Dean's throat under the shelf of his jutting jaw. That was enough to keep him from firing at Morgan while he tried to knock her loose. Morgan dived for the Colt on the ground. Hyde moved with surprising speed for such a big man and rammed into him, knocking him away from the gun. Morgan lunged behind the horses, using the animals to shield him from Hyde's charge and from Dean's and Fowler's guns. The shot had spooked the horses, so they were dancing back and forth. Morgan tore the buckskin's picket rope loose and leaped onto the horse's back. He banged his boots against the horse's flanks and sent him leaping forward. The buckskin's shoulder collided with Hyde. The big man had more than met his match. He went sailing off his feet from the impact. Morgan leaped off the buckskin and tackled Dean, knocking him away from Tasman. Both of them went down hard. Morgan crashed a fist into the outlaw's face and used his other hand to grab the wrist of Dean's gun hand. He slammed that hand against the rocky ground a couple of times, and the second time, the gun came loose. Morgan hit him again. He didn't have time to do anything else before Hyde grabbed him from behind, lifted him into the air, and threw him against the bluff. Pain shot through Morgan as he crashed into the unyielding surface. Hyde came at him again. Hyde's eyes widened as bullets punched into his back. He stumbled forward, reaching behind him and trying to paw at the wounds like a maddened beast. The shots continued until the hammer fell on an empty cylinder. Hyde lost his footing and fell to his knees, then pitched forward on his face, revealing Tasman standing behind him, both hands wrapped around the butt of Morgan's Colt as smoke curled from the muzzle.
Kid, watch out, huh?
Morgan whirled around and saw that Fowler had broken away from the Paiute, who had been wrestling with him while Morgan had his hands full with Dean and Hyde. Fowler snapped a shot at him. Morgan dove and rolled, grabbing the Winchester as he did so. He came up on one knee and fired the rifle from the hip. Fowler jerked backward as the bullet drove into his chest. Morgan worked the Winchester's lever again and took aim. The impact sent Fowler stumbling away from the fire. Morgan sprang to his feet and grabbed Tasman's arm.
Are you all right?
When she nodded, he shoved her toward the horses.
Get behind them and stay there!
He stepped over to Bearpaw and bent down to help the Paiute to his feet.
How about you? Are you hurt?
No. No, this old skull of mine is too hard for it to be dented easily. Better keep an eye on that one.
Bearpaw nodded toward Dean.
What about the one I shot?
You put two rifle slugs in his chest, kid. I don't think we need to worry too much about him.
Morgan hoped Bearpaw was right about that. He wasn't going to venture out into the snow to look for Fowler. Dean was still only half conscious. Morgan made sure he was disarmed, then tied his hands behind his back. Hyde was dead. Even as big as he was, five 45 caliber slugs in his back had been enough to put him down for good. Morgan checked him to be sure.
Did I kill him?
You sure did.
Good. He had it coming to him. You don't know all the things he did back there at Rose's.
Bearpaw built the fire up. As its flickering light filled the area under the bluff, Morgan knelt in front of Dean and lightly cuffed the man back to consciousness. Dean lifted his head, staring at Morgan with pure hatred. His lips were bloody and swollen from Morgan's punches.
You're him, aren't you? Browning.
I don't know what you're talking about. My name is Kid Morgan.
I don't care what you call yourself, you're him.
Morgan had reloaded and holstered his Colt after taking it back from Tasman. He slipped it out now and placed the barrel under Dean's jaw. He eared back the hammer.
If you believe that, then you know you'd better tell me what I want to know.
Dean looked like he wanted to tell Morgan to go to hell. Defiance burned in his eyes. But that defiance faded under the steady, level gaze of the kid.
What is it you want?
Radigan and White Rock are supposed to be prospecting somewhere up here at a place called Blue Creek. Is that true?
As far as I know, it is. I remember them talking about it.
Do you know where Blue Creek is?
From the way Radigan talked, it's about 15 miles west of Trinidad.
All right. Where are Clay Laswell, Ezra Harker, and Vernon Moss?
You crippled Moss. You'll never walk in those legs again. Laswell and Harker got a wagon to put him in it. They were gonna take him back where he came from, somewhere down in Texas. Little town called Diablito.
Little devil.
You know where to find that town?
Not really. I just know that it's somewhere on the Rio Grande, right across the river from Mexico.
The Texas-Mexico border was pretty long, Morgan recalled, but he would travel every mile of it if he had to in order to find Laswell, Harker, and Moss. He didn't care if Moss was crippled. The man hadn't yet paid the price for the crime he'd helped commit. Not by a long shot. As Morgan took the gun barrel away from Dean's neck, the man looked around.
Where's Fowler? Where'd he go?
He stumbled out into the storm after I shot him.
Damn it, you're gonna leave a wounded man out there in that blizzard?
I'm not going to go out there looking for him, if that's what you mean.
You can't just leave him to die.
He's probably dead already. The kid hit him two times in the chest with that Winchester.
Morgan stood up and went over to Tasman.
You'd better crawl back in your bedroll and try to get some more sleep.
What about you?
I'll turn in after a while.
What are you gonna do with me? You gonna kill me too?
Bearpaw hunkered beside him.
I'd say you've got it coming for what you did, mister.
It wasn't my idea. Laswell and Moss were the ones behind it. The rest of us were just hired hands.
Laswell and Moss had been hired hands too, Morgan thought. For the first time in a while, he pondered the question of who had hired Laswell and given him his orders. But the snowy night held no answers.